The NFL is back and eager to appease football. Tune in this Sunday for all the politics you didn't realize you wanted shoved into professional football. Pre-game, watch Terry, Michael, and Howie break down Tom Brady's rough debut in Tampa Bay and then break down emotionally over police misconduct. Football. Next at 1 p.m., some of you will watch the Washington football team as they take on the Minnesota Bearded Boat People. Football. The Philadelphia White Fragilities go head-to-head with the Miami Trans Women Are Women. Football. And the Atlanta LGBTQIA face the Tampa Bay Black Lives Matterers. Football. Politics and sports has never been more fun. Flags, lighter fluid, and football.
You're listening to Questionable Material, produced in New York by Jack Helmuth and Brian Sack. QMPodcast.com.
Tired of it.
What? Tired of what? You're just doing your rants again.
Tired of your crap.
What did I do?
I don't know, but you did it.
I may have done it. I've done a lot of things today. But I'm not sure I like where this is going.
Oh, yeah? Name one thing you've done today, mister.
I drove across the formerly Tappan Zee Bridge, now the Mario Cuomo Bridge.
Still the Tappan Zee in my heart, Jack.
Four times today.
Why?
To take my daughter to private school in New Jersey.
Oh, is that the reason? Or maybe you love bridges, Dick?
Oh, excuse me? Excuse, I love bridges? Is that what you said to me?
Yeah, I do think, yeah, you're a bridge lover. You like bridges. You like things that span water, jackass.
Don't say that.
You do. It's true.
I'm completely indifferent. I mean, sure, sometimes it's fun to like look at them or to draw them or to do sketches of them. Or
Bridge boy. Traverse
don't call
man.
Bridge boy. That's going to catch on. Stop
hey,
it.
Hey, traverse man. You like that?
That suggests I traverse all over the place.
Yeah, that's right. It does. Especially across spans of water, like some kind of twat.
Don't call me a bridge lover.
You're a bridge lover and you love crossing water on something solid like a bridge. Bridge loving you know, jackass.
It's bridge phobes like you that are ruining this country. Close-minded bridge phobes.
Oh, yeah. Well, we used to have covered bridges. Where are those? They're all dead now. You know why? Genocide.
No, we just figured out a better way to do it, so we didn't need those covered bridges anymore. We're doing it better.
Oh, is that the reason?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, my God.
You should look it up. It's real simple.
I've been so pissed off about the lack of covered bridges, and I always assumed it was a genocidal impulse on behalf of...
Oh, is this where all your anger comes from?
Yeah. It's gone. It just vanished. It left my body like it was almost like a bowel movement, but it was like this angry... Angry spirit just kind of went shot out of my nipples as you were saying that. And now, aside from sore nipples, I feel nothing but just, I feel calm.
Well, first of all of my bowel movements feel like an evil spirit is leaving me. But I do want to say that I'm happy that we're able to come to a place where maybe you can let your hate go.
It's gone. And this feels like teletherapy. Is that what teletherapy is like? Is this teletherapy? Are you teletherapizing me?
Probably. This is probably way better than whatever that nonsense is, whatever that bunk is.
Well, I feel better, Jack. I feel pretty good, except for the fact that I strained the living majugula, that's a word, out of my something on the side, a muscle on the side of my body, Jack. Either the exterior oblique abdominal thing or the dorsal lassoassi something.
I'm concerned, though, because didn't you, there were a bunch of statues to bridges up in your hometown.
Yeah.
And you tore them down.
Yeah.
I hope you're going to make it right, because you've done a lot of things. I'm glad you've recovered, but you really have gone overboard in your hatred of bridges.
It wasn't my hatred of bridges. It was my hatred of bridge using people. You know, the people who don't want to pretend that covered bridges didn't exist. And you know,
look, buddy, I know I get it now, but. Like, what are some of the things you've done? Obviously, you've torn down statues.
Yeah.
There's the famous statue in your hometown called the Traverser, who's just a regular Joe waving on a bridge.
Yeah, and that's gone. I tore that down. I attached that to the back of the car and just hit the gas.
Okay.
Fender tore right off.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. No.
But my brother-in-law is in trucking, so he's got a much more powerful rig.
Yeah.
So then I just drove the rig into the statue. Brother-in-law hasn't talked to me since. You know, rigs are very expensive. These truck driver things.
Uh-huh.
Very expensive, Jack. I think he spent $100,000 he spent for his rig, right?
And why didn't you think of using the rig to maybe just pull the statue like you did with your car?
Well, yeah, that's what he was. He was upset because he was hauling three excavators and he just kept looking out. He's like, any one of these could have easily, with one gesture, with hydraulics, just knocked a statue off its pedestal. I don't know why you had to destroy my expensive truck.
Of course, that's what those things are for.
I'm set, and I apologize to him profusely enough. Of course, you know, it's all on me, he says, because I'm the one who told him he didn't need insurance.
is that true though?
It's not true, but I just, you know, I like to test people. I tested my friend Dave. I told him, dude, you don't have to pay taxes. It's in the Constitution. And so he listened to me.
Wow.
Didn't pay taxes for several years.
And what's Dave doing these days?
He's somewhere in Costa Rica.
He's on vacation.
No, he's in hiding.
Oh.
Yeah, he's looking for a way to get back into the States. They garnished his wages and his bank account and seized his house.
Huh.
So he's, of course, he's been out of shape. And I swear to God, he's probably talking to my brother-in-law.
Why is that?
Well, because I told my brother, my brother-in-law has no insurance. I'm sure there's some kind of evil plot that the two of them have for me.
Oh, that's a little concerning. They need to get over that. Now, you used to do this sort of goofy thing with all of your gay friends in the 80s, right? You used to sort of give them challenges. What sort of challenges did you give them?
The I hate latex challenge, where I convinced everybody to give up latex, like not even be in its proximity for, as long as possible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who won the latex challenge of your friends?
Nobody.
Your gay friends.
Nobody did. Nobody won it. Sad.
Oh gosh. What happened?
They all got sick, Jack.
Oh, inconvenient timing.
Yeah, no, it was the wrong time to convince my friends to stay away from latex.
Oh, man. That's not your fault, though. That's not on you.
I say that all the time. They, their spirits disagree with me. They wake me up in the middle of the night, accusatory, moaning and stuff. And
what do they say? What are they moaning and saying?
This is all your fault. Come with me. I'm going to take you on a tour of Christmas past.
Oh,
yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. I thought it might be Scrooge. And he said, no, I'm screwed.
So they wanted you to take your shirt off and go on a tour of Christmas past.
Yeah.
Huh. That's flattering, I guess.
Not 4 months into the lockdown where I have not necessarily been treating my body like the temple that it is. Mm-hmm, I've kind of, I've indulged in extra portions of food late at night. And I might've had a lot of beer in the course of the past 4 months. And so I'm not feeling like I want to take my shirt off.
What does your wife say about this development in the change in your body?
She calls me piglet, but lovingly, I think.
You think so?
It's hard to tell with the accent, but I feel like, piglet, you disgust me, piglet. Go away, piglet. Don't touch me. Sleep in the guest room, please.
Well, that sounds pretty clear. Even for a woman who speaks broken English and often lapses into Polish and other sorts of gibberish, that sounds pretty clear. It sounds like I know what she's saying to you.
Well, it's possible. It's possible.
So I'm driving all day, every day, getting my daughter to and from this school that's far away from my house, because we actually got in. We could not afford to go to a private school. We actually got a bunch of financial aid and were able to go in for basically $4,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But you still get to pay taxes as if your kid's going to a public school. That's the best part.
Yes. Yes. I'm still paying the $33,000 a year in taxes we pay here in Dobbs Ferry.
So right. For the school you're not using. Well, that's great. Does she like the school so far?
So far, so good.
I mean, it's first day, so it's hard to know, right?
Well, she actually started last week. Today was my son's first day at public school. We kept him in public school. And she's been doing her private school now for almost a week.
Okay. And she's going every day?
Every day.
So she's not, there's no teachers union demanding that she stay at home and you take care of it?
No, it's really weird. They have this weird policy at this school where they want to educate the kids.
Huh.
It's like, at first we got really angry when we heard this because, you know, we come from a public school. So we yelled at them and said, how dare you? We're the parents. You can't take this away from me. But then I remembered that I don't know anything about teaching or much of anything other than about video games. So I apologized and sent them an email saying, I was wrong.
And they're educating your kitty.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. So, Brian.
Yeah. Why? Who?
No, you.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I don't. Yeah.
No, I'm not a fan of you either, but just roll with it. I've got a thing I want to talk to you
okay,
about.
Okay, try it again then.
Okay. Hey, Brian.
If you want me to be, I will, Jack.
You know what? From you, that's a win. I'll take that. So when presidents leave office, oftentimes money is gathered and they open up what is called a presidential library.
That's right.
That I don't know how long that's been going on. You're an expert. You probably would know better than I.
I do know. You know who started that?
Who?
Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Oh, really?
And his is actually right down the Taconic. And it's, it's about like an hour or so outside of New York City.
Okay.
And
is it handicap accessible?
It is not. Isn't that funny? There's a huge sign. It says, no handicap people, please. We understand the irony is what it says at the bottom in parentheses.
Jeez, just build a ramp.
I went there and it's actually fascinating. Like they had his office and all with all his books and he had this big chair there. And, you know, he was very careful because if people don't know, he was really in a wheelchair. I mean, he had polio legs and could barely walk, you know, but he would, they were saying like he would sit behind his desk and kind of, you know, reach up to shake your hand if you walked in. And managed to convey power, you know, from his, even though he wasn't able to really walk.
Wow.
But, you know, he would kind of put on the act, lean up from his chair, reach over the table, shake your hand, have you sit down. He'd sit back down and you'd never see him actually being wheeled around or anything like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But he had, and there was a very cool room. It was where Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Winston Churchill sat and discussed the Manhattan Project. And let him.
No kidding.
Yep, it's where he said we think we will have the capacity to create a bomb of unparalleled destruction. And it was right in this very room, and we were just standing there. And I was like, "Oh my God, that's awesome!" And I took out my gum and I stuck it under his desk, just so I could be part of history.
So clearly, you have just demonstrated that you are exactly what I claim you to be, which is an expert on presidential libraries and their ilk.
I guess so. Yeah, I sure am. You're right. I've always felt that way.
Well, you wrote a book about it, right? You published a book on presidential libraries?
I did.
Yeah, and remind me again what that was called.
Presidential Libraries. Everything You Need to Know About Them by me.
I love that it's really flat and generic until you get to the author.
I was pressed for time. They were like, Brian, we need a title for this book. We need a title for this book. Hurry up. And I, you know, my wife was in the middle of childbirth. I didn't want to be on the phone. You know, the kid was crowning. So I just rushed it, you know.
Okay. It's so funny because I've had the crowning dream about your wife so many times. It's weird to hear you talk about it.
You've wanted to see my son coming out of her vagina vulga?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
You are clearly an expert at this. And from what I'm told, some of the more recent presidents have interesting additions to their presidential libraries. And some are even deciding that they don't want presidential libraries. They actually want different types of buildings or things to celebrate their accomplishments. Yep. So I was wondering if I could ask you about some of the big changes that are happening in the world of presidential libraries.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Oh, thanks. So what is you know, let's go right for President Obama, because, right. you know, he's been out of office. They've been planning this. What are some of the big changes that are being made for President Obama's library?
Well, the Obama library is going to be located in Manitoba.
Manitoba?
Yeah, Canada. Because, you know, he was a Canadian at heart. A lot of people don't know that, but he was very Canadian.
Really?
Yeah.
Of all the countries he's associated with, and there are a few, I'm surprised he's choosing Canada.
Yeah, I know. A lot, you know, he had been accused by some people of being Kenyan, which I always thought was kind of ridiculous. And a lot of people, you know that he comes from Hawaii, but he's always been a Canadian at heart. And that's one of the reasons why he tried to implement the Canadian health system, which he loves. Oh. He adores it. And I don't know if you know this, but you know his daughter's names?
Malia and Sasha.
Right. Well, Malia is one of the biggest lakes in Canada.
Really?
Yeah. Malia is the, it's the what do they call them? First Nations.
Oh.
So we say Native Americans, and Canada, they call them First Nations. Malia means the biggest lake in Canada.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And what does Sasha mean?
Tobacco.
Now, is that through some sort of love of Canada, or does the president just love his cigarettes?
He loves cigarettes. He's a huge smoker. I think we all know that. He was known for smoking. One of the reasons why he pushed for the Affordable Care Act was because he wanted to smoke as much as he wanted without having to pay more in insurance. And he wanted the state to take care of him if he developed a gigantic tumor.
Oh, that's smart, I guess.
Little trivia there.
That's great. This is what we're looking for. This level of trivia. I did not know that.
So the Presidential Museum in Manitoba, it's got a bunch of different exhibits. One is he has saved every cigarette butt that he ever smoked. So there's a room called the Hall of Butts. And it's an endless corridor of butts. He smoked a ton.
Man, I could see a lot of people going to that room and being very disappointed.
Yep. And I don't know if you know, obviously he settled down on Michelle Obama. They've got married. But he dated a lot before he settled down with Michelle.
Okay.
So you walk down, it's the Hall of Exes, and you go in there, and they have preserved all of his ex-girlfriends in formaldehyde.
Oh, these must be like women in their late 40s, maybe probably most of them mothers at this point.
Well, I mean, they as soon as Obama became president, and they kind of had an inkling that this is the way the museum might go, they grabbed the women to prevent them from aging any further. Because if they had waited until the end of his presidency, then, they would have been 8 years older. And of course,
yeah, and they'd look like him.
Right.
Not so good anymore.
So they grab these women in their prime and drop them into formaldehyde tanks. They've illuminated the faces in the tanks as you walk down this hallway.
Wow. And
it's really, so you get a kind of you get an idea of the taste of, you know, he had in women.
That's really lovely. That makes a lot of sense. That's the sort of thing you want to teach kids about former presidents.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. So that's about 38 or so women in formaldehyde tanks.
And how big is the Hall of Butts, by the way?
The Hall of Butts is fairly, you know, it's fairly long. I mean, there's a people mover. If you don't feel like walking the entire hall, you can stand to the right and go take the people mover and just kind of, because you get an idea. Once you've seen 30, 40,000 butts, I mean, you get the idea. It's not, you know, it's no different at the beginning of the ride than at the end.
Sort of like the Paris catacombs. Like once you see enough skeletons, it's sort of like, okay, I get it. It's
yeah, skeletons. Exactly. Yeah. Catacombs is a very good comparison to the Hall of Butts.
Okay.
Yeah. and actually, ironically, also like the Hall of X's, except they've been perfectly preserved and they're not yet skulls.
That's great. That's lovely. And is it true that in order to get into the Obama Museum and Library or whatever, there's a red line that they tell you not to cross, but you have to know that you just got to cross it anyway and nothing bad will happen.
And nothing bad's going to happen. Exactly. You cross it and you go right in.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. So I was wondering, now I know he's still in office, but apparently plans have been moved quite quickly along for whatever there's going to be to honor President Trump. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the about what that's going to be. Where are they in the planning stages?
Well, they're already in the middle of remodeling the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. If you recall, we were there many years ago shooting the show.
I do.
In Atlantic City, which is a beautiful, beautiful city. I have nothing bad to say about Atlantic City. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I remember, if you recall, the Trump Taj Mahal was already in the process of being torn down, unbeknownst to anybody working or staying there.
Yes, yes, I do remember that. The fraying carpets and the
wires the hanging out of the ceiling.
Gold, yeah, told me that.
Yeah, the wires hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
The windows boarded up with plywood. Yeah, it was nice. And so that's going to be converted into the Donald J. Trump Presidential Library.
Oh, so it is going to be a library.
Well, it's a library without books. So there won't be books in it. There'll be pictures of the president and various celebrities that he's met or fired over the course of his career. They will have a situation. So you could actually pretend to be the president. So you'll have like a,
Fun.
So what you do is you sit at like a replica of the Oval Office desk. And you're going to pick your cabinet. You'll have like these animatronic characters and then you pick 10 of them. And then almost as quickly you let them go.
Okay.
So you kind of simulate the experience of being a president.
And that's fun.
There's going to be, there's a replica of the presidential bathroom and you can sit on it and tweet.
Oh, that's fun.
Just like do like these tweet storms. And then there's a TV mounted across from you from the toilet and it's got Fox News on it and you can almost instantly see a reaction to your tweet. And we've got actors playing Fox and Friends. And so they're going to say, oh, the president just said this. And then it's going to create a whole news cycle.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Gary Busey exhibit.
So the president, as you know, when he was on The Apprentice, he worked with Gary Busey.
Of course, we all know that.
And a lot of the president's policy decisions are based on his interactions with Gary Busey.
Really?
Yeah.
And so, like, can you give me an example?
Yeah, sure. Like, name a country.
Germany.
So with Germany, it's just like Germany. And that's kind of how we treat Germany now.
That's our foreign policy for Germany.
It seems to be.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, and what about an audio animatronic Jared Kushner in the building that apparently you can't tell the difference between the real one and the fake one?
Yeah. And in fact, what's funny is like sometimes Jared Kushner, when he's not busy, which is a lot, he'll come to the museum and he will take the place of the animatronic Jared Kushner.
No.
And people don't have any idea that it's the real Jared Kushner. They'll sit down next to him. They'll take photographs with their friends. They'll make jokes. They'll say anti-Semitic things. And nobody notices that it's the real Jared Kushner.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's very
fun. And so what is the animatronic Jared Kushner, you know, when it actually is that, what does he go around the building doing?
He goes around and he fixes things. So, so he walks up and he takes a screwdriver and he leans over towards like an outlet. And he'll like jab the screwdriver into the outlet a few times and then go fixed it and then walk away. So it's kind of like it's kind of like what he does. He goes and he's a fixer. So he might walk into the coat room at the library and knock down some of the coats and then he'll say fixed it. And then he'll walk out of the coat room.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And tell me about the Hall of Daughters.
It's all the Trump daughters, but in order of preference.
Oh, describe the layout of that and how that room works.
You walk into the room and there's a wax statue of Ivanka holding her trademark, Ivanka Trump brand purse, which is available. You can actually order it on your phone right there.
Of course.
And then there's the bathroom.
Okay.
And then there's Tiffany Trump. That's the exhibit. Mm.
That's really cool. But I hear Tiffany Trump actually works there cleaning the bathrooms, which has got to really just sting.
Yeah, and stink.
Now, the last thing I wanted to ask you about the Trump Museum and Library Without Books was the Herman Cain Wing.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's like Herman Cain's greatest moment. So it starts with him, saying COVID-19 is a hoax and ends with him lying in state. So we take, President Trump took a page out of the Soviet and North Korean playbooks, and he's preserved the body of Herman Cain perfectly. So you can see him.
Well, it sounds like what those Obama monsters are doing with all those ex-girlfriends.
Yeah.
Except Herman Cain's actually dead.
There's a wing, like they have simulations, so you can simulate world events.
Okay.
And so you play the president, and so you'll be faced with a dilemma. Okay, Angela Merkel has allowed a bunch of immigrants into the country, 1 million immigrants from the Middle East. And, here's your chance to judge her looks.
Wow. That's, again, they've thought of everything.
Yeah.
That's really great. And lastly, it's really premature. I was shocked to hear that they've already been raising money for this. But the Joe Biden Library and Museum, he hasn't won. He may not win. What are they doing? What are they doing with that?
Well, I mean, the assumption is he's going to win.
Okay.
But if he loses, they'll just hold on to it and they'll give it to the next Democratic president. Because he's not going to know.
So Joe may not even know that he lost the election.
Yeah, that's possible. That there's a chance he might not concede because he didn't know he was running in the first place.
Ooh, that's a real constitutional dilemma.
Yeah. And the forefathers never prepared for anything like that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, here's hoping democracy can, that the great American experiment can survive this one.
Yes.
Whew. Well, thank you so much, Brian. You are an expert beyond compare.
Thank you,
Jack.
Jack.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Better. We've talked about this in the past on the podcast, but for those people maybe who are new to the show and don't know this about you, and this is true, you used to be in advertising.
I did, Jack. I used to be in advertising. That's true. That is very truthful.
I'd say this is your area of true, actual expertise. You're very good at marketing, at coming up with ads, jingles, slogans, that sort of thing. I think you're very talented at it.
Thank you, Jack.
Jack. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. So I wanted to know if, maybe we could show off some of your talents, because I know you've taken on a bunch of new clients recently.
I have.
And I was wondering if you could just sort of talk about their new marketing campaign, where they're looking to go with things, how they're looking to rebrand themselves, or maybe some commercials that they have that you're sort of pitching them in the hopper.
Right.
Would you mind doing that for us?
I would not mind.
Oh, good. I thought that was going a different way.
Nope.
So first of all, I know you got the Denny's account.
Yes.
Congratulations.
That's right. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So what is it that Denny's is looking to change or improve? And how are you going to sort of rebrand that company?
Well, see, Denny's is interesting because I have personal experience at Denny's.
Sure.
I got foodborne illness there once.
Oh, how fun.
And I remember the waitress handing me my plate and she had those long fake fingernails.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And two of them were resting on my food as she was handing me the plate. And I thought to myself, like, how does one go to the bathroom and really clean those fingernails because they're so long and weird. And it just seems like there's something that wouldn't be able to be cleaned properly. It just a thought occurred to me as I was getting my food delivered to me. And then that night I was seriously ill with foodborne illness. And I could only think that the waitress wiped her bum and it was on her plastic fingernails. So that's kind of what I brought to the table when Denny's approached me.
Sorry, go ahead.
And they said, we want to do our, a breakfast promomotion. We want, $6.99. You get your eggs anyway, a cup of coffee, a cup of orange juice type thing. They're pushing that. And I came back to them with, have a good morning, but without foodborne illness. And they wanted to focus on the breakfast part. I thought it was more important to focus on the fact that if your waitress has fake fingernails that are 2.5 inches long, that she knows how to clean each and every one of them to remove any fecal matter or any other kind of bacteria that might affect your system later. So they were alarmed at first. They thought that that wasn't really the message that they wanted to promote. But I insisted that I am good at advertising, and they finally relented.
That's what you just telling them over and over again, that you're good at something is what got them to see your way of doing things?
Yes. And so I just kept saying, listen, guys, I'm good at, you know how the president's like, I'm good at business. I was just like, yeah. I'm good at advertising. You got to trust me with this. And so they finally threw up their hands and they said, okay, Brian, do it your way. So the new tagline is Denny's No Bum Bacteria. And it's going to be a whole breakfast promotion. And we're going to have a wide range of characters.
Characters, fun.
Yeah, they come in for to get breakfast. And it shows them 4 hours later when foodborne illness would normally kick in. And they're all doing fine.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. They're not throwing up or anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you show that in your commercial?
Yeah. Like, so they you see the whole group goes out. They're all friends. And I wanted to be very diverse. So there's one of each. And so there's a table of 16 people. And they all sit down and have breakfast. And then there's like a little wipe, a star wipe. Uh-huh. And then this guy is in the bathroom, coming out of the bathroom, and his girlfriend comes over and she's like, did you just puke your guts out? And he goes, nope, I had Denny's. So it's to really kind of reaffirm that you're not going to get bum-borne bacteria from the waitress's extra long plastic fingernails.
Wow. So, and that's the sort of the slogan of the commercial, like, nope, I just had Denny's.
I just had Denny's. And then the little, Denny's, no bum-borne bacteria.
Man, that's really smart.
Yeah. Well, I am good at advertising. I don't lie.
You're really good at advertising.
Thank you, Jack.
Yep. So I know you got, and this is cool. This just shows the breadth of your abilities. You got the Legs Sheer Energy pantyhose.
Yes.
Cool, man. It's not necessarily one that I would necessarily think you'd be good at, but what's the plan there? What are they looking to, what's the message they're trying to get through, and how are you going to help them do it?
Well, this one is set in Tehran, in Iran. And so you have all these women walking down the street and they're all in the full niqab. They're on the chador. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody else calls it a burqa, which is not technically accurate. But the head to toe, they're in black, and they're all walking down the street. Except one is everybody's kind of shuffling along, except one's got a little spring in her step.
Oh.
And it cuts, the camera swings to the vice police. And the vice police come running up, and they see spring in her step, and they just yank off her black niqab / chador. And they pull it away from her, and there, sure enough, she's wearing legs. And they, all the vice police, they kind of look at each other and they all kind of scratch their beards and they look knowingly at each other. And they're like, I knew it. It's the legs. And they turn to her.
Oh, and that's the end of the commercial?
It's the end of the commercial. I mean, the rest of the storyline is she's in prison for 16 years, but we didn't have time for that. And that's not really the message we want to get. The message was legs put spring in your step. And that's where we leave it.
So what's the very last image before the graphic comes up? What's the very last image we see?
Well, I mean, she's being thrown into a van, but the leg is the very last thing that they push into the van. So like you just see the long leg and it's covered in legs and then they just push it into the van and slam the door shut. And then it drives away.
It goes cool.
It goes to Evan Prison, but you don't really know that.
I mean, is there a website or something where you can sort of like find out what happens at, legspantyhose.com?
Yeah. So, and at the bottom it says, find out what happened to Masse. And so you can go to the Legs website and you'll have all these different women. You can click on Masse or Nayuz or Saba or Neda or anybody. And you can find out what happens to them when they were wearing legs.
That's the gallery of whores, right? Who wear pantyhose on their legs?
I mean, that's what the regime calls them. They would beg to differ. They were just going for a walk.
Hmm.
Or protesting the government.
Okay. Legs, pantyhose. Yeah. Well, good luck, Brian, with that.
Thank you, John.
Jack. So This is an interesting one. A tourism campaign for Visit Libya.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, you know, you get a country, especially a country with maybe some oil money. I imagine that could pay for some private school bills for a while.
Yeah. So Libya, we kind of destabilized under Obama.
Sure.
Gaddafi was made dead as a result. And so it's kind of in this this lawless hellhole with fighting tribes and jihadists and loyalists and regime people. You know, it's just a big mess. You know, it's the desert tribe thing. It's just what they do.
Yeah, of course. I know.
And what they need, we thought, was tourism dollars. They need people to go there and have a good time and enjoy Libya. So what we do is I thought it'd be a good idea because, you know, next door, I believe, is Tunisia.
Yep.
And so you got Tunisia and Libya. And so it opens on a beach and the guys in Libya, you know, sitting on the beach, getting some sun and drinking a cocktail. And then right on the beach, right across from him in Tunisia is another family lying on the beach, having cocktails, kids are playing. And then Islamists come and they start peppering the Tunisians with gunfire. And they light up the whole beach with gunfire. But you notice like the Libyan side is just sitting there, the guy's sipping his drink and looking over, you know, 20 feet away and watching everybody in Tunisia getting gunned down. And then he looks at the camera and he says, "Thank God I'm in Libya."
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, your juxtaposition is what we call it in the advertising business.
Okay.
So you use one product, which is Tunisia, and you and your family get massacred by Islamists. But if you use our product, which is Libya, then you have a nice day on the beach and you're reading your book. As long as it's not the Bible.
What is there a version of the commercial where someone, you know, to teach potential tourists what happens if you're reading the Bible on a beach?
No. You open up the drawer, the night table.
Okay.
And you see the Gideon Bible.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Except it's booby trapped. So if you open it up, it activates an alarm and it sprays your face with blue ink that you can't get off for several hours.
Okay.
And then the hotel vice police will come pounding on your door and demand to see all the occupants of the room. And of course, whoever's got the blue face is the one who was looking at the seditious material and will need to be brought to justice, as they call it.
Wow. Goodness. Good luck. You know, I've seen Back to the Future and I know that the Libyans can be a little bit dangerous. So just be careful with that account. Okay.
Thank you, Junk.
Jack. So you got, back into the food market, which I know you're somewhat of an expert in.
Yeah.
Certainly from looking at you, I could tell. You got Orida extra crispy tater tots.
Yes.
Awesome, man. I mean, Orida's got to be a big company. How do you sell a tater tot? It seems like a pretty fixed market.
Well, you know, everybody loves tater tots, right? What do we love about them?
The unique shape, maybe?
The unique shape. They're potatoey, but they're crispy, crunchy on the outside, and then they're soft and delicious on the inside, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and what we do is the commercial has a potato woman giving birth on a hospital table to tater tots. So that the tater tots are coming out of her potato vagina and going marching in order. You know, they're born and then they hop on a conveyor belt, which brings them into an oven. And then the oven, you know, toasts them to perfection.
Oh, that's really chilling. And do we spend any more time with the tater tot mother?
Just at the end, she's sitting in a hospital bed surrounded by crispy tater tots. And she looks sad as though all her tater children are dead and prepared for consumption. But we don't really say that.
Right.
We just say the great flavor of Orida is all Rida. And then she's...
It's a little grim, but if that's what the company wants...
I don't know if it's what they want. They haven't seen it yet.
Oh, really?
I just finished it this morning.
How much time did you spend on, if you don't mind me asking, the potato vagina?
Well, I mean, on the graphics or just coming up with it?
Both.
Coming up with it was really simple. I had accidentally taken a lot of Motrin and cough syrup. And whatever it was, I don't know if it reacted weird with my Manuka honey and my vitamin C, but I was just, stuff was just talking to me, that things were melting and stuff. And then, you know, I had a conversation with the carpet, where in the carpet let me know that potatoes have biological sex and did in fact have male and female organs.
Uh-huh.
So I guess that's where the idea for the potato vagina came from.
Sure. So that came to you almost instantaneously. And what about the drawing or the animation? Because that's probably what it was. How did you create this, and what did you use as your inspiration?
Jeremy Lemons from Pixar. He had been at Pixar, but he got fired for writing a controversial memo because he said women weren't good animators. And so they canned him. So he is a really good animator, and he's desperate for work these days. And so, I contacted him. I said, listen, I need a potato with female biological parts. Is that something you can do? And he's like, what is this? And I was like, well, it's for a writer. It's for tater tots. And I said, obviously tots are children, and children come from the female biology. And that's what I need on the potato. And he said, it was kind of like this heavy sigh. And he's just like, I'm your man, I guess, is what he said. Mm-hmm. And I said, great. And so he worked on the ad for several weeks. And what he sent to me was so incredibly realistic that I was actually prosecuted for vegetable porn, which I didn't realize that's a thing. I mean, there's child porn, and then there's vegetable pornography, which apparently is considered even worse.
What?
So I was dragged to the town court, and there, a lot of accusatory stuff. But in the end of the day, I defended myself. I was my own lawyer, and
always a good idea.
They realized this was for advertising. It was for the cause of good. So, So we then, with that animation, I told them what I wanted. I wanted the woman potato pushing these tater tots out of her, female biology in a steady stream. And he's just kind of, he looked, it was over Zoom, of course. And he just kind of couldn't tell if he was looking at me or just looking away at something in the distance, as if, he'd lost all pride or something. I don't know. It's hard to tell over Zoom.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, it sounds dynamic. I can't wait to, I'm going to start watching live TV just so I can see that commercial.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. I'm really excited for it. And, I'm so excited. I went ahead and I did the full ad buy. I didn't really consult Orida. I greenlit everything because I want them to be surprised. I want them I want everybody to see it, love it, and turn around and Orida goes, oh my God, Brian, you were right.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty big expenditure on your part.
Well, it's on their part.
Oh, they give you some companies give you their UPS tracking number. Did they give you their company credit card?
Yeah.
Golly.
I just issued purchase orders in their name.
How much money did you spend?
14 and a half million.
$1 million. Oof.
Yep. And that's for YouTube ads only. And then I did, we've got Instagram stories. And I'm really, I'm targeting, I want to target the younger people who love tater tots. And so we did a lot of the kiddie YouTube channels and it's going to be great. And actually, what grade is your daughter in?
Third.
So she should be getting a book bag. Yeah.
Boy, you really greenlit you really went all out with this, this campaign.
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm going to license it. There could be a ton of money in licensing. I mean, the Star Wars people made a fortune. I can only hope that I'm that popular.
I think that's an appropriate barometer for yourself.
Thank you.
Well, Brian, I don't see how that can go wrong. I can't wait. I can't wait for the free tote bag. And, thanks for making life better.
Thanks, Jack. That's what I'm doing. Some people do Miley Cyrus things. I do Brian things.
You sure do. And hey, thanks for getting my name right.
Hmm?
Nothing.
That was Questionable Material. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Make sure to review the podcast. Make sure to visit qmpodcast.com for episodes, show notes, and bonus material.